The court's ready to hear argument in Lee versus Choice Hotels. Good afternoon, Mr. Jones.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Francis Jones for the appellants. I'd like to introduce Greg Hansel from the Petit Flaherty firm from Maine, who will handle the argument today. He's been admitted pro hoc vici in this court and was admitted pro hoc vici in the proceedings below.
Welcome to the court.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Before I turn on the clock, let me just remind you that you're going to start with your total 20 minutes and a green light. And when the light changes to yellow, the clock will have also counted down to the time you reserve. You can continue, but you will be using the time you've reserved.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I apologize for my hoarse voice today. First, I want to thank the court for allowing me to appear pro hac vice. I would like to introduce two of my clients who are present in the courtroom today, Your Honors, Mr. Bo Hyun Lee and Mrs. Won Ki Kim, the parents of Chan Young Lee. If you would please stand for a moment. Thank you. Your Honors, a 7-year-old boy fell into a deep hole hidden under the water in the shallow end of a Quality Inn swimming pool. In this negligence case, appellants asked the court to overturn summary judgment for defendant Choice Hotels International to permit appellants to present this case to a jury. Appellants assert three main points in this appeal. The Superior Court erred in granting summary judgment, excluding appellant's expert, Mr. Ebro, and denying appellant's motion to name a substitute expert. Those three points are interrelated because the summary judgment was based in large part on the absence of an expert. I will begin with the summary judgment issue. For three reasons, the appellants presented a case triable to a jury. First, this is a case of negligence per se. Second, a jury does not require expert testimony because the hazard is so obvious. And third, the court did not disqualify Mr. Ebro as to the appellant's direct claims against Choice Hotels, counts 3 through 6. Let's begin with negligence per se, Your Honors. The Superior Court held that Indonesian law applies. No one disputes that. The appellants filed a timely notice of intent to rely on foreign law pursuant to the Delaware Rules of Evidence 202E. Appellant's expert on Indonesian law, licensed foreign advocate Andrew Sriro, is the reviser of the Martindale-Hubbell Law Digest summary for the country of Indonesia and the author of Sriro's desk reference on Indonesian law. He's possibly the world's leading English-speaking expert on Indonesian law. He's practiced in Jakarta since 1996. Mr. Sriro established through uncontradicted affidavits, declarations, that under Indonesian law, the concept of an unlawful act is equivalent to negligence in American law. Mr. Sriro testified that Indonesia's Regulation 61 is valid, in effect, and applicable throughout the country of Indonesia, including Batam, where the accident
is there any occurred. Explanation in the record about why, on his initial visit, he was unaware of Regulation 61?
Your Honor may be confusing Andrew Sriro, who is our source of foreign law, proof of foreign law,
with Ebro,
and Mr. Ebro, who was our initial expert.
Well, I guess my question, worded more carefully, is given your expert, when you your expert on Indonesian law, when Mr. Ebro went over there, why wouldn't he have been made aware of Regulation 61?
Neither we nor our Indonesian law expert had yet identified Regulation 61. All of these things were happening about the same time. And when Mr. Ebro made his first visit to Indonesia, we had not yet obtained an opinion on Regulation 61 regarding pools.
So you're saying not only wasn't Mr. Ebro aware of it, but even your law expert was not aware of it?
Your Honor, I'm not sure we had yet retained him at that time. I will say that the Superior Court allowed an extension of time to for Mr. Ebro to complete his expert report before the second Daubert hearing, and therefore Mr. Ebro timely did give an opinion that Regulation 61 codified in large part the previous standard that he had already testified about in his initial opinion.
Right. And I ask these questions because one way to look at the Superior Court's ruling somewhat simplistically is Mr. Ebro did give an opinion, but he was unaware of Rule 61. And although now he is aware of it, he said, well, Regulation 61 is consistent with what I said earlier, so this is even more support for what I'm doing.
Exactly.
And the Superior Court said, well, if you didn't know about Regulation 61, what else didn't you know about? You've undermined your credibility with me because of your lack of knowledge on Regulation 61, even though you've embraced it now. So I take it your argument is that if those concerns of the Superior Court were legitimate, it would not go to the qualification of your expert to testify, but rather be something that should be subject to cross-examination.
Exactly, Your Honor. Thank you. To further respond to the court's question, it is not easy to determine what Indonesian law is. Obviously, there's the language barrier. It's a civil law country. We did eventually locate Mr. Sriro and retain him to render an opinion for the court's information on the substance of Indonesian law. Mr. Ebro's mission had more to do with taking
of Indonesian law. The unlawful act, your expert defined that as basically a failure to act reasonably and in good faith.
Yes. Right?
Now, I understand your expert and your position that on failure to act reasonably and negligence per se, but I'm unclear on what evidence or inference satisfies the lack of good faith. Aren't these in the conjunctive under Indonesian law?
Yes, let me address the court's question. First of all, Your Honor is correct that there are two different issues. First, there's standard of care, and then there's negligence per se, where on negligence per se, we take the view that there's a violation of Regulation 61 that is sufficient to establish negligence per se. But if one also looks at standard of care, then there's this doctrine in Indonesian law that an unlawful act consists of a failure to act reasonably and in good faith. Since the word and is used, the failure to act reasonably by itself would violate the requirement that one act both reasonably and in good faith. If one does not act reasonably, then by definition one has not acted both reasonably and in good faith. So it is not required to show that someone did not act in good faith. Now,
and that's what your expert says in the affidavit somewhere?
He uses the word and. He doesn't actually parse it the way I just did, but I think using the word and is clear that one must act both reasonably and in good faith, as the statute, as Regulation 60, or excuse me, as Mr. Sriro's statement of the law of negligence or unlawful act in Indonesia is defined.
Let me interrupt because I'm perhaps going off a field and I'd like to be redirected if I'm mistaken here. Is it undisputed that at this pool there was a sign saying no children under the age of 12 are allowed in the pool without their parent or without an adult?
No, that is disputed. We have evidence in the record that there were no such warning signs, that the Lees saw no such warning signs that day at the swimming pool. Choice has presented some evidence in the record that at some point in time there were some warning signs somewhere on the premises, which is a very large waterfront resort with a beach area and other areas, and it's definitely disputed that there were any sufficient signs between the hotel and the pool where the Lees walked when they went on their first visit there in 2001.
All right. Well, then, getting to the Indonesian law expert's statement of what the law is that would govern this situation, was there any explanation of what would be contributory negligence or comparative negligence or anything like that in terms of what the person who's injured has an obligation to do or not do?
Mr. Serrero did not present any law on contributory negligence. I do not know if Indonesia recognizes contributory or comparative negligence.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is this: if you've got a case that involves a tort that is going to apply foreign law, and the foreign law says that, you know, the pools shall have certain depths to them and what have you, and your expert says that is the law, and that it would be unlawful to violate Regulation 61, does your expert also say and that injuries to an individual are compensable for that type of violation?
Yes. The compensability of injuries is addressed in Mr. Serrero's affidavits. There are two of them.
And that's without regard, you know, the affidavit says without regard to what may have actually contributed to the injury.
The affidavit doesn't refer to contributory negligence or comparative negligence, but it does include a concept of cause that is stated in the affidavits of Mr. Serrero. I would point out that the Choice Hotels International has never presented any proof of foreign law whatsoever in this case, despite the fact they have, at the time, they had several hotels operating in Indonesia. They have thousands of hotels all over the world, great resources, and the ability to present that law. And it is inexplicable that if Choice believed there was contrary law, or, for example, law on comparative negligence, that they would not have presented it to the court in this case if they believed there was such law. We believe we've presented the law accurately. There's been no rebuttal of that by Choice or any other source. Regulation.
If you prevail in this appeal, can that be revisited on remand?
Yes, Your Honor. At one point, the court mentioned the possibility of retaining an independent expert on the law of Indonesia. That is one approach that courts have taken. And sometimes the parties are asked to pay for that. So if the court vacates the orders entered below, that could certainly be revisited on remand. Regulation 61 requires commercially managed public swimming pools, such as the Quality Inn swimming pool, to take these safety precautions: to employ trained lifeguards, the slope must not exceed 10% at depths of less than 1.5 meters, and there must be signs stating the depth and separation marks between the shallow and deep areas. Mr. Serrero opined that Regulation 61 establishes a clear and unambiguous standard that an Indonesian jurist would apply, and a violation would constitute negligence per se. This is consistent with the law of negligence per se in Delaware. Appellants presented unrebutted factual testimony that the slope of the trench exceeded 10%. In fact, it was twice as steep as the maximum allowed.
Is there any explanation in the record as to why these things exist? They apparently exist at more than one pool. Is it on the assumption that someone is going to jump into the pool, go down deeper, and then step up onto a shallower part?
Choice Hotels has never proffered any explanation for why there would be a deep, unmarked trench in the middle of a shallow end. It's a mystery. It's a menace. It has no place there. I don't know what the court is referring to, but I have not seen anything in the record that suggests that there's any other swimming pool like this in Indonesia or anywhere else.
I thought the the expert visited other hotels and found similar trenches?
No, he actually didn't find any similar trenches. I'm not sure what the court may be referring to there, but I don't believe that's correct in this record.
I think what one thing he found was other pools without lifeguards. Is that right?
Some of the other pools, yes, did not have lifeguards, and Choice has certainly argued this point. And I would suggest that may be an example of selective enforcement or something, but that does not.
Justice Berger asked about the sign, said, you know, no children under 12. And is there a dispute of fact in this case about whether at this location there was a sign about no lifeguards?
Yes, there is a dispute about no lifeguard signs as well. I see that my warning light is up for 5 minutes, and I wish to reserve 5 for rebuttal, if I may. Thank you, Your Honor.
Very well. Good afternoon, Ms. Cobb.
Good afternoon, Justice Holland, Justice Berger, Justice Ridgely. May it please the Court, Nancy Cobb on behalf of Choice Hotels International. As Mr. Hansel noted, the plaintiffs have appealed from three different rulings from the trial court below. In chronological order, they were the decision to strike the testimony of Thomas Ebrow, the decision not to allow the plaintiffs to designate what they call a substitute expert, and finally, the motion for summary judgment premised upon, largely, as Mr. Hansel points out, the failure of the plaintiffs to establish the standard of care.
Now, I might have read the record incorrectly, but it seemed to me it took the Superior Court a long time to make several of these rulings. Is that correct?
Yes.
Many months? Long beyond the 90 days that we normally would like rulings in?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, with respect to the determination as to Mr. Ebrow's qualifications as an expert, the standard of review on that, as the Court's aware, is the abuse of discretion. A review of Judge Tolliver's decision and a review of Mr. Ebrow's proffered testimony clearly supports that Judge Tolliver's decision was well within his discretion. Mr. Ebrow proffered an affidavit in the summer of 2004. That affidavit had been crafted by counsel and contained what we now know were factual inaccuracies about the layout of the pool. Mr. Ebrow traveled to Indonesia and indeed to Singapore in the early months, I believe January.
And the inaccuracy you're referring to is the fact that there was a spa or something in the pool that he referred to as a kiddie pool.
Correct. There are additional inaccuracies that came up during his deposition, but that's the easiest one to point out. When Mr. Ebrow traveled to Indonesia, which was admittedly his first experience with the country, he was there for quite some time, several days, met with individuals, gave a deposition in late March, early April of 2000, I believe it was early April of 2005, at which point he specifically indicated in response to one of my questions that he was unaware of any regulations regarding the need for lifeguards, and that he was unaware of any particular regulations governing the maintenance or design of a swimming pool. In fact, as Judge Tolliver did point out in his opinion, this negligence per se and breach of warranty arguments are arguments that are not pled in a 103-paragraph complaint against my client. There's no reference to Indonesian law, Indonesian regulations, or Indonesian standards. The reference within the complaint is to industry standards, and it was to those purported industry standards that Mr. Ebrow addressed his initial commentary.
Are the industry standards and Regulation 61 consistent?
In some degree, if we accept Regulation 61 and the, quote, reasonably accurate, unquote, translation of it as having the interpretation that Mr. Ebro places upon it, yes. The difficulty with Regulation 61 is that there, as Judge Tolliver correctly points out, there's a lot unsaid within that regulation, and there's a lot unsaid in Mr. Schreiro's, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, declarations or affidavits, particularly terms that are not defined and for which the court, struggling to determine the application of Indonesian law, was given no guidance upon. And that is, for example, Regulation 61 uses the term lifeguard personnel. What does that mean? I think within this courtroom, living in, you know, United States and the experiences that we all have, we get a picture of what a lifeguard is. But there's no indication that that is what lifeguard, what is meant by the term lifeguard personnel. Similarly, commercially managed pools. In the United States, for example, with the exception of the District of Columbia and I believe one other state, semi-private hotels, resorts, are exempt from any obligation to have lifeguard personnel.
Well, on your first point, you know, Mr. Hansel, Mr. Jones in their brief say, no matter how you define lifeguard personnel, you need at least one of those people. And that in this case, there weren't anybody that would fit into that category, no matter how you define it.
Well, lifeguard personnel doesn't necessarily mean you have a lifeguard on duty. It could just mean that you have somebody there who is trained in CPR, and they've presented no evidence that there wasn't anyone on staff trained in CPR, trained in rescue, trained in water chemicals.
Well, aren't the facts, at least as alleged or referred to, that any resuscitation effort was done either by tourists or by a relative, as opposed to any hotel personnel?
As alleged, yes. We have presented the affidavit of the individual who transported the Lees to the ambulance.
So is the real problem with Mr. Ebro that he didn't know about Rule 61, or was there another, I mean, Regulation 61, or was, what was the other basis for excluding him?
He was unfamiliar with the Indonesian standards. He, according to his own very methodical note-taking process, deviated from his ordinary practice. We raised additional challenges to Mr. Ebro's opinions regarding the nature of the parents' actions or inactions and the ability to comment upon cause. Judge Tolliver did not address those in his decision to strike Mr. Ebro.
What's the time period where the qualification of the expert should be judged? Let's assume, well, that it's correct that he knew very little at the beginning, but by the time the case was underway, from various resources, he got up to speed and became knowledgeable, and as a result of that, had some experience and expertise that could benefit the jury. Isn't that the time that he gets judged in terms of whether he's qualified under Daubert?
Well, with respect to the case scheduling orders, with all respect, the case scheduling orders control. And Mr. Ebro's opinions, there were some changes to the case scheduling orders, but at the very latest, his opinion had to be proffered by the end of March 2005. And at that point in time, the motion to strike was filed. Actually, two separate motions to strike were filed, one for discovery abuses, which the judge did not rule on, and the other for Daubert grounds. There were then two Daubert hearings held, and it was at the conclusion of the first Daubert hearing in June that Regulation 61 first was proffered.
Well, we seem to have evolved in our jurisprudence where we call everything a Daubert hearing, but this hearing was the type of hearing that we would have with experts long before Daubert was ever decided. Daubert, you know, had to do with people who were giving these theories, and the question was, were you an expert? Could it be replicated? And is it viable? But let's suppose we call all of these hearings Daubert hearings. In this particular case, why weren't the concerns raised about the expert ones that went to weight rather than his qualifications as an expert? Tell us succinctly why this person simply wasn't qualified as an expert under any circumstance?
In all candor, because he didn't know the standard of care for a hotel resort operator in Indonesia.
And that's
he couldn't articulate it.
Independent of not knowing about rule regulation 61 or because he didn't know about regulation 61?
Actually, not knowing about regulation 61 is certainly part and parcel of the larger problem, but I would say independent of regulation 61. He simply didn't have the background, the expertise. He couldn't articulate the standards. And in fact, the standards that he did articulate were premised upon the ANSI and NSPI standards as he judged the pool in 2005 when he visited the pool, not based upon any indication as to how that pool was in 2001 or
now,
when the pool
how
was
that developed in the record? I can understand why once everybody learned about Regulation 61, he said he didn't know about it. That would be cause for concern. But since he was the only expert being considered, how do you conclude he otherwise didn't know what he was talking about? How did you establish that?
Largely through the cross-examination and the use of his notes. And he testified that there should have been a lifeguard, yet he noted in his meticulous handwritten notes that the out of the five resorts that he visited in Indonesia, he also visited some in Singapore, but we'll exclude those for purposes of this discussion, there weren't lifeguards. He noted, in fact, that the Indonesian standards were not, I forget what phrase he used in his hand notes, but essentially up to the standards of the United States, but that this resort seemed to meet the Indonesian standard. That's what's in his notes. So he clearly was making an observation based upon a tour of five hotels in Indonesia, which is not required, which does not suggest that it's calling into to play any expertise or educational background, experience, training, and the like.
Why would he not be qualified to answer a question that assumed the law of Indonesia is Regulation 61, which requires a no more than a 10% grade at depths of less than 1.5 meters? Does this pool satisfy that requirement? Would he be able to, after viewing it, be able to testify on that?
But that would not be an expert, necessarily an expert opinion. I mean, it's a measurement.
But does everybody understand 10% grade? Is that within the ken of the average?
I would think not, but it could be explained by Mr. Ebro. He was proffered as an expert in aquatic safety, and that's how he was designated as their expert in aquatic safety. I think what Justice Ridgely, your question is going to the heart of is, we have to establish what Regulation 61 is, and after that, could he, if Regulation 61 is in fact deemed as reasonably accurately translated to be the law of Indonesia, then could Mr. Ebro comment on it? I suppose he could.
And I guess following up on that, why doesn't that kind of complete the circle, if you will? You've got an accident that happens in a swimming pool, a commercial swimming pool in Indonesia. You've got a regulation that an expert on Indonesian law will testify, says X about what commercial pools like this one had to have, that the failure to meet these standards is the equivalent of negligence in the United States law, and then you would have either an expert or simply a fact witness who says, I went there, I did the measurement, this pool didn't have the proper grade. Why don't you, having established all of that and having established, let's assume, that the facts are that this boy went under in a portion of the pool where it was this excessive grade. Why aren't you, at least from the plaintiff side of the case, done?
If those facts were on the record, you very well might be. The issue and the difficulty is that at this point in time, the record has been closed. There's never been an application to reopen the record, even with the summary judgment that was pending, and as Justice Holland pointed out, pending for quite some time. There was never any application to reopen the record.
But wait a second. I'm confused about, you're talking about reopening the record. I thought all the stuff I just described is in the record.
It is not, Justice Berger, and what is not in the record are multiple things. Number one, that Regulation 61 applies to this pool. That Regulation 1.
Well, wait a second. That's what Mr. Sriro, right? Wasn't his expert opinion that Regulation 61 does apply to this pool as well as all other pools in Indonesia?
Well, as Mr. Hansel pointed out in his briefs below and as Judge Tolliver noted, Mr. Sriro was not proffered as a testifying expert. He was proffered as an expert to help educate or as an authority on Indonesian law to help educate the court. Conclusions under Superior Court Rule 44.1 and DRE 202E, conclusions need not necessarily be accepted by the Superior Court as it grapples with what
Indonesia. The Superior Mabin. Court opinion specifically concluded that Regulation 61 applied to everywhere in Indonesia.
I'm sorry, Justice.
Isn't that in the Superior Court's opinion a conclusion that Regulation 61 applied everywhere in Indonesia?
Yes. What Judge Tolliver said, very succinctly put to the plaintiffs, is you didn't give me enough information and this record doesn't have enough information and it's too late in the game to tell me that Regulation 61 is interpreted to include a hotel, resort, swimming pool.
Well, he said on page 22, it appears that Regulation 061 is valid law applicable to the entire Republic of Indonesia. Now, how is your client excluded if it's in the Republic of Indonesia?
No, I'm not arguing that it doesn't. I'm sorry if I'm not making myself clear, just originally. Regulation 61, what we have is a reasonably accurate interpretation, which must be subject to further interpretation, further refinement, as is noted within Regulation 61. It contemplates additional regulation, additional instruction, additional guidelines. What has never been defined, and what you do not have any authority from anyone who is practiced in either Indonesian government, Indonesian enforcement, the regulation management, or design of a swimming pool for a hotel resort in Indonesia, is that Regulation 61 applies to a resort swimming pool.
Well, at what point can the jury take the translation and the ordinary meaning of the translation and apply it? And let me just give you an example. I mean, we have statutes on speeding that are cited all the time. It's negligence per se. A driver must drive at a speed reasonable to road, weather, and traffic conditions then existing. A violation of this statute is negligence per se. There's no further definition of what's reasonable. It's for the jury to determine, isn't it?
Yes, and in this instance, if what the court is suggesting is that a jury can determine what is commercially managed, I would suggest that you need testimony as to what commercially managed in Indonesia means. And we don't have that. I'll also point out that whether this case gets to a jury is a subject of a motion that was pending and not ruled upon, based upon the ability to obtain a jury trial under Indonesian law.
All right, let's leave that one aside for the moment. But it seems as if what you're arguing is that the plaintiff has put in a certain amount of information, both about this pool and what was or wasn't happening there, and about the law in Indonesia, and that the reason why the plaintiff shouldn't be able to go any further is because the information that's been provided doesn't answer every possible question. And your side has, understandably, for tactical reasons, not put in any evidence of what Indonesian law is. Although I wouldn't be real surprised if the case were going forward that you would come up with an expert who might have a different view of what Indonesian law is. But in any event, aren't we in a position where they've put in the basics and you're free to pick at it and say, oh, but, you know, we might not actually be a commercial establishment? Well, you're really telling us that we have to have an expert say that a hotel that's part of an international hotel chain that is in the business of, you know, having guests come and pay for services, that that's not a commercial establishment? You know, is that something that requires an expert?
I would suggest in this instance, and when it's an interpretation of an interpretation of an Indonesian law, yes, you would. In this instance, I would argue that you would. The record in this case is closed. Judge Tolliver did what was required of him under the rules to try to determine what the law is. He relied upon information, including information suggesting that there is no interpretation of Regulation 61 consistent with how the plaintiffs are presenting it.
Thank you.
My time is up. Thank you.
Your Honors, the franchise agreement between Choice Hotels and its franchisee in Indonesia incorporated the rules and regulations of Choice. This is all in the record. And those rules and regulations, in turn, incorporated by reference the ANSI NSPI, National Swimming Pool Institute, later National Spa and Pool Institute, regulations, which in large part are codified in Regulation 61, including the maximum slope or declivity in the bottom of the swimming pool and the use of depth markings and separators between deep water areas and shallow areas. Mr. Ebro did testify to that standard being violated by this swimming pool in his initial presentation. Later, when he learned about Regulation 61, he stated that that was consistent with it and expanded upon it to add a lifeguard requirement.
Now, that's relevant to show what? That Choice was negligent in allowing this pool to open in violation of its own contract requirements?
It is evidence of negligence that and sufficient, in our view, to reach the jury, that Choice allowed this hotel to violate the standards that it had adopted itself, which are industry standards that are commonly used in many places around the world, including by Choice Hotels worldwide
now,
in 42 countries.
Is there Indonesian law on that?
The Indonesian law is Regulation 61, and it does not specifically name the ANSI NSPI standards, but in substance it incorporates them in terms of the slope and the depth markings and separators between shallow and deep areas. Regulation 61 goes one step further and adds a lifeguard requirement that is not present in the ANSI NSPI standards. I did want to mention that there is one error in the court's opinion. The court states, I believe in a footnote, that the plaintiffs were aware of the substitute expert, Mr. Hendry Johnny, since the beginning of the case. I don't know where the court got that because we did not seek to retain a substitute expert until the March 2006 opinion, when Judge Tolliver excluded a portion of Mr. Ebro's expert testimony. Once we received that opinion, within a week, we moved for leave to name a new expert, and within 6 months, we identified and received an expert opinion from Mr. Johnny and filed a notice of lodging with the court. A year after that, the court denied our motion for leave to name a substitute expert.
What's your response to Ms. Cobb's statement that your complaint does not allege negligence per se?
The complaint does not use the words negligence per se, but we are unaware of any pleading requirement in Delaware that when one pleads a premises liability negligence case, such as this case, that it is required to plead negligence per se. If there is any such requirement, then if the case is remanded, we would seek leave to amend the complaint to conform to the evidence and to the law. As we have stated, it is difficult to ascertain foreign law, and we think that this case, to reach the merits of this case under the applicable Indonesian law, it would be reasonable for the court to permit an amendment if any amendment is required. But we also believe it is within the scope, the negligence per se theory is within the scope of our existing pleadings, the broad scope of those pleadings for negligence. The appellants suggest that our unrebutted citation of Indonesian law by a recognized authority on the subject provides ample basis to apply negligence per se.
And Mr. Hansel, you're out of time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you both. The court will take this matter under advisement, and we will adjourn.